searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Hello and welcome in to this Friday edition of The Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I'm hoping you're having a great day, whenever and wherever you may be listening, or wherever that day is occurring. And I hope you and yours are doing well. Looking forward to a weekend. It's just me and the pup this weekend. There she is. Kimber the Wonder Dog. A little scratch between the eyes. Yeah. Jane has gone off to Arkansas to visit our nephew Shane, and we'll be back on Sunday. She says probably around 6 o'clock Sunday. No. She'll be dragging in later than that. I really think she'll be dragging in later than that. And well, anyway, it's going to be a weekend with just me and the pup, and finishing up work on the car, and not much else. And honestly, I'm going to do everything I can until sometime late Sunday to just unplug. I'm going to try not to pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the world. I'm just going to finish working on the car and hopefully have it out zooming around the countryside this weekend. I know I promised you at one point that I was going to share pictures with you about the progress on the car, and I have been derelict in my duty in doing so, but this morning, actually, as the intro music was playing, I was getting away from that page that I'm working on, which has all the photos I've taken. And honestly, I didn't think I'd taken that many photos, but I have. I've taken a bunch of pictures because along the way, my friend Mike and I have been comparing notes. He's got a Miata that's about exactly the same age as mine, and so I've been sharing my work progress with him. And his Miata has been flawless. He's never had an issue with it, not one. Mine has been fraught with little niggly issues, and it's just part of owning an old car. You know, you're going to work on it from time to time. Sometimes if you want to take it out and drive it, you have to work on it before you can take it out and drive it. And that's kind of how it is. That's how it's been for me, at least, with this owning this particular car. And at any rate, back to what I was saying, I'm a little distracted. The pictures are going together. I'm actually putting together a post for the Miata project on dailyperspectivepodcast.com. And I will also link that to social media so you can get there from Facebook and Twitter and see the pictures of the progress. And I'm captioning each picture with what it is, what's, you know, why, and et cetera. And you can see the progress. As it is right now, as of today, Friday, the 24th day of July, 2020, the little Miata is still sitting up high on its jack stands in the garage. The head is back on, the cam cover is back on, everything is back together, almost everything. The only thing not on the car right now is the radiator and the air intake tubing. That's it. I'm gonna put the radiator on the car as soon as I get this particular podcast buttoned up and delivered, so that you can be listening to it if you're a podcast subscriber. And I'll be putting the radiator back in the car. I'll be putting fluids in and putting the intake tubes back on, and then starting it up. And that will happen hopefully before lunch today, because I want to get that going. Because if there are any issues, I want to spend the rest of today debugging any little issues I may have, and then spend tomorrow driving the car. And hopefully, in case you forget, the reason I did this was because it was burning quite a bit of oil, and the only place I could figure, given the symptoms that the oil was getting into the engine, was from above, down the valve stems. And that, of course, means the valve stem seals were bad. So I replaced the valve stem seals. That's all documented in the photos. In fact, I've been putting the pictures up, and that happens. I'll finish that page probably later today and get it posted. At any rate, I promised you pictures. I haven't given you pictures, but boy, are you going to get pictures now. A lot of them. Oh my gosh. Baseball season started yesterday. Did you see the excitement the in the air? It was palpable. It was, excuse me, the baseball season started yesterday. Empty stands, cardboard cutouts of fans in some of the stands. Fox Sports is working on virtual fans in the stands, which part of Fox Sports' thing that I love is that the virtual fans in the stands, those virtual fans, they'll actually, if things aren't going like they want, some of them will get up and leave. I just think that's priceless. I just love that idea. But on the whole, just between you and me, on the whole, cardboard cutouts of people in the stands, the empty stands yesterday that I've seen on video on the news, the empty stands, creepy. It was almost like the guys were in full uniform in their home and away uniforms at some sort of a batting practice or something. It was just weird because there's one I saw where some guy hits one far and away into the stands, way out in the beyond the outfield, and there's nobody there scrambling to catch the ball. Just empty seats. Very, very, very weird. And just between you and me and the dog, this is not right. We're being held captive. We can't go to the sporting events. We can't do the things we want to do. We're being told to be afraid, and they're trying to push some kind of a new normal on us. And that's the way I look at it. They're trying to push a new normal on us. We're having to wear masks. We're having to stay. They're trying to keep us in fear. And it's wrong. It's just wrong. It's absurd in the worst kind of way. And I can laugh at part of it. The cardboard fan cutouts. That's just absurd. It's ludicrous. They're charging a couple of $100. You send them a picture, they'll make a cardboard cutout, put you in the stands. If you're a season ticket holder, I think you get that for free for some of the teams. But wow, your cardboard avatar attending a baseball game and then you sitting at home watching it. And then what about the guys playing? They're used to hearing the feedback from the crowd. That's part of the process, that feedback from the crowd. But they don't get it. They're just not going to get it. Staying in the world of sports, the team formerly known as the Washington Redskins has adopted a new name. They'll be going by Washington Football Team. I'm so sorry. The Washington Football Team.
Once again, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, me too. The Washington Football Team.
Great googly moogly.
Yeah, what you said. What were they thinking? The Washington Football Team. Now, of course, people are already... they're already going nuts. It's just, I mean, seriously.
What a bunch of crap.
Yeah, it is. They announced this placeholder name. They're calling it a placeholder name. Well, we got to call ourselves something. What do we call ourselves?
How about the Washington Football Team?
It's just, it's like the characters from a cartoon show came up with a name.
We got to call ourselves something.
They announced this name yesterday ahead of the start of training camp next week. The team says in a statement, the decision to use Washington Football Team for this season allows the franchise the ability to undertake an in-depth branding process to properly include player, alumni, fan, community, and sponsor input. To date, we have been pleased to see so many people putting forward their vision of what the new name and design should be on their social media channels, and we look forward to including their feedback as this progress progresses. I wonder if they took mine into consideration. I proposed a name. I proposed that they call themselves the Washington Leghorns. Listen to me when I'm talking to you, boy. Foghorn Leghorn. The chicken. Because they're chickens. For knuckling under to the idiocy of political correctness. The Leghorns. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Perfect. And in the logo on the sides of the helmet, they could just change it to Foghorn Leghorn. A little licensing with Warner Brothers would be involved, but hey, it's perfect. Owner Dan Snyder recently dropped the Redskins name amid pressure from sponsors after decades of criticism from Native American advocacy groups. Might I just add my own two cents in here? These Native American advocacy groups speak on behalf of Native Americans who usually, most of the time, aren't all that upset about things. Well, that's kind of cool. We're called they got an Indian logo. That I like that. That's pretty cool. Yeah, we were fierce warriors. Mm-hmm. And that's a fierce team. These people are advocating for people who really don't care if they're being advocated for. That's happening not just with Native Americans, but for most people who are being advocated on behalf of by groups of progressives who feel like they're finding some sort of purpose in life by defending groups who are saying, we just really don't need defending, but thanks for the effort. But, and then they tell them to shut up. When they try to say, hey, don't worry about us, we're good. Duh. It's infuriating. At least it is to me. Absolutely infuriating. Now, on Monday, Dan Snyder hired Terry Bateman as Executive Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer to oversee the name change and the rebranding process. The franchise began back in 1932 in Boston. They had the name Redskins since 1933. A year after they were founded. Now, FedEx, the CEO of FedEx, he's a minority owner, and other prominent sponsors called on Snyder to drop that name. And he did that after launching a review process. Red Wolves and Red Tails are among betting favorites for the new name. Really? Between those two, it has to be Wolves, okay? Because it has to be some sort of a fierce fighting animal. And you remember Rush Limbaugh used to do this politically correct football forecasting. He would always choose the on Fridays, he would predict who was going to win the games over the weekend based on political correct reasoning. And it was always the Dolphins, because they were nature, they're in nature and they're an endangered species, they should win, and things like that. So it has to be the Red Wolves. Because if they're going to be politically correct, it has to be the Red Wolves. Because they got to have some sort of fierceness in the name. Got to be something, you know. But the Red Tails, well, I'd hate to see their responses in their DMs. Twitter should be interesting if they call themselves the Red Tails. Oh, Carnegie Mellon Associate Professor of Marketing and Strategy Tim Derdinger recently said, I think it's critically important. Because you don't want to do a name change again. You don't want to mess this up. They really need to take it seriously. Seriously? Can I just... Seriously? We're supposed to take this seriously. I don't think we can. Thanks for trying. I really, really, no, seriously, I do appreciate it. I really do appreciate it. So seriously, on your way out, to see the lady at the front desk with the big hair for your check, because you've done a great job. Taking it seriously. How can we take this seriously? The only thing I can take seriously about this is the serious error that these people are committing. They're knuckling under to the politically correct pressure from groups of people. I want you to listen clearly here. Listen carefully here. They're bowing to pressure from people who will never spend one dime supporting their team. Oh, sure, they're corporate sponsors. Yeah, they'll spend some money. But the people in the stands, the people in the stands aren't voting for this. It's the Monday morning quarterbacks and people who aren't even at that level who are making these insistences that they do these things and make these changes. People making demands that an NFL football team change its name because it's offensive to a group of people for whom they advocate. And these advocates have probably, the vast majority of them, have never spent a dime on going to a football game. Most of them wouldn't know the names of the players, couldn't point out the quarterback in a lineup, and unless they had it on paper in front of them, couldn't tell you what city the team is in. Yeah, that's a lot what it's like. Isn't it? Isn't it a lot like that right now? Holy moly. What's next? No, please don't answer. I really don't want to know what is next. I seriously don't. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. The Washington football team. Why didn't they just call it the Washington sports team? I posted on my social media today they're calling themselves this generic name. And it made me think of back when generic foods first hit the market. I don't know if you are old enough to remember that, but I remember when generic foods hit the market. And you could go into your supermarket, and there would be a section of generic foods. For example, you're going to get some cornflakes. And there you are on the cereal aisle. And there is a section of generics. We have that now. We just call them store brands. What's happened is the generic thing went away because people thought, well, that's just dumb. And so stores decided, well, why don't we pick this up? Let's buy these generic foods. Buy the generic cornflakes and repackage them with our store branding. We'll call them, we'll come up with our own name and a nice colorful package that'll attract the eyes of the kiddos, and it'll be our product. And so now you have store brands instead of generics. Generics were the forerunners of store brands. So, but at the time, The generic packaging was white. It was white. A white box with black letters. And if there was an image of the product of any kind, it was probably a black and white or grayscale image. That was generic. Go look at the Daily Perspective Facebook feed today and you'll see that image. Well, they should have. I think the Redskins should have just bought white uniforms and put black numbers on them and put the team member names in black letters and white helmets with the team numbers on the sides of them there and gone with it. Well, that's what they replaced the Redskin logo with on the helmets, was the team, their player numbers. So it's on the back of the jersey, it's on the side of the helmets, or on the back in front of the jersey and on the side of the helmet. And it occurs to me that that's what they should have done. They should have gone the Washington generics. They just call themselves the Washington, which they might as well have because they're the Washington football team. Good God almighty. This is so stupid. It's just one of the dumbest things. And of course, everybody's all the politically correct weasels out there saying, well, that's just as, that might even be more problematic because, you know, Washington was a slave owner. It's just, if you think it can get any less insane or any more insane, you're wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. It's just insanity. I wish I could say it wasn't insanity, but it is insanity. We're seeing it happen day in and day out. We're watching the idiocy. Oh my gosh. It's like school children are running everything. They're coming up with their answers and coming up with these ludicrous solutions to problems, which really aren't problems, but they see them as problems. And this will fix everything. Oh, that's perfect. That'll work. That'll work fine. Oh my gosh. It's just,
when I was a child, I thought as a child and spoke as a child. But when I became a man, I took that child out back and had him shot.
Oh my goodness. Well, maybe we should take this politically correct child out and have it shot, because it can be entertaining. It's got some entertainment value. But holy smokes, campers, this is bad. It's really bad. I tell you what else is bad is Joe Biden. Good Lord, the man needs to go back to his bunker in the basement and just stay there. And somebody needs to take his camera away from him, because whenever the man speaks, it just removes all doubt that he's not qualified to be the president. He's just not. Most recently, Democrat president candidate Joe Biden said President Donald Trump is the first racist president in U.S. history, a statement that overlooks numerous presidents who either owned slaves or were overtly discriminatory towards racial minorities. Democrats. During a virtual town hall organized by SEIU. You remember the SEIU? Oh, they've been a source of trouble and in trouble legally off and on for a long time. The Service Employees International Union. On Wednesday, Biden responded to a question about President Trump calling COVID-19 the China virus by claiming that not only is Trump a racist, but he's the first racist ever to become president. Quote, the way he deals with people based on the color of their skin, their national origin, where they're from is absolutely sickening. No sitting president has ever done this. Never, never, never. No Republican president has done this. No Democratic president. We've had racists and they've existed. They've tried to get elected president. He's the first one that has. Oh, wow. There's so much wrong with that statement that it would take the rest of this podcast to break it all down. I'll just take the first, well, first the obvious thing. The statement is incorrect. It's exaggerated. It really could get more backlash from Democrats than from Republicans. He claims that Trump is the first racist to be elected president. And to do that, he has to skip over presidents who did own slaves, presidents who condoned slavery, presidents who either actively implemented or passively accepted overt systemic racism and segregation. All of it, by the way, instigated and propagated by Democrats. And presidents who supported the KKK. Also, Woodrow Wilson, hello, a Democrat, celebrated the KKK, screened Birth of a Nation in the White House. Now, the campaign is scrambling to add some context, but they can't. There's just no way they can. Let me go back to what he said. The way he deals with people based on the color of their skin, their national origin, where they're from, is absolutely sickening. I want the Biden campaign to provide specific in context examples of this happening. I will not hold my breath while waiting for them to do so, because they can't. The President Trump, as far as we know from everything we can gather, has never dealt with people with any sort of bias based on the color of their skin, their national origin, where they're from. It hasn't happened. In fact, President Trump, when he was in the process of revamping Mar-a-Lago and discovered that it had been a segregated golf course, a country club that didn't allow black people or Hispanics. It was a whites-only club. When he found that out, he said, this ain't happening here. He changed everything. He has hired people of color, minorities, and put them in positions of high responsibility. Not only that, he has black women running huge parts of his organization. His daughter is Jewish. He has Jewish grandchildren. The man is not a bigot. He is not a racist. The leftists have put this label on him in order to anger people who do not do their own thinking or research. Anyone who is actually, with an open mind, looked into his past, realizes he has championed minorities for as long as he's been in the public eye. That he has worked with and helped to promote and helped them to succeed. Joe Biden is not only exaggerating, but he's exaggerating a bald-faced, baseless lie. And it's just part of the desperate effort on the part of the Democrats to unsettle the American people about the presidency of Donald Trump. He is not a racist, and there is nothing taken in complete proper context that proves he is. Only things taken out of context and applied in that manner indicate otherwise. And taking things out of context is in itself lying. So Biden and everyone around him are lying to the American people. Shocker. Welcome back to this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. The 24th day of July, 2020, jumping into the weekend. I hope you've got a good one ahead of you. As I mentioned earlier, my weekend is... Actually, I don't really have any plans for the weekend. It all centers around the Miata project, getting that finished, which hopefully I should have done today. And as I mentioned earlier, driving it around. That's what I hope to be doing this weekend. And mowing some grass. It seems like every time I've gotten ready, I've been ready to mow the grass, we've had rain. And we've had this, you know, we've been having those pop-up thunder showers in the afternoons, like most places. Here in the Southeast, in the summer, you can count on a couple of things. It's going to be hot, and it's going to be humid. And it's going to rain. And the further south you go, you get into Florida, rain is just part of every afternoon. It's just part of your plans. You know, it looks like it rains so hard, you think you should probably build a boat and start gathering animals by two. It rains that hard. And then it goes away. And everything is cooled down a little bit. And if it rains late enough in the afternoon, then it stays rather cool for the rest of the afternoon. But if not, if it rains earlier in the day, it heats back up again, and all that moisture that's in the soil, it just percolates out. It steams out, and everything is humid, and it's terrible. Anyway, I got to mow some grass. I really do. You know, and I've been saying so for a couple of weeks now, but I was talking with my neighbor yesterday and looking at his grass and looking at my grass thinking, yeah, I'm a bum. I need to mow my grass. So that's probably going to happen probably tomorrow morning after breakfast. I'm going to mow some grass. All right. There's a story making the rounds about sharing your political views. And I wanted to talk about this morning because, or today, for depending on when you listen, I wanted to talk about this because I relate. I can identify with the story. Coming from CNS News, strong liberals are the only political group who feels they can express themselves without fear of repercussions. That's according to a new Cato Institute survey. In a national survey of 2,000 Americans at least 18 years old, conducted between July 1st and 6th of this year, Cato asked respondents to agree or disagree with the following statement. The political climate these days prevents me from saying things I believe because others might find them offensive. 62% of Americans agreed. That's up from 58% in 2017. And that leads the Cato Institute to conclude that self-censorship is on the rise in the United States. Republicans were most likely to be afraid, 77%. 59% of independents follow that. Slightly more than half of Democrats at 52% said they were afraid to voice their opinions. By ideology, staunch liberals were the only group where a majority said they felt free to voice their opinions, even as centrist liberals felt unsafe, signaling a divide between the far left and moderate liberals. Cato reports, strong liberals stand out, however, as the only political group who feel they can express themselves. Nearly 6 in 10, 58% of staunch liberals feel they can say what they believe. However, centrist liberals feel differently. A slim majority, 52% of liberals, feel they have to self-censor, as do 64% of moderates and 77% of conservatives. This demonstrates that political expression is an issue that divides the Democratic coalition between centrist Democrats and their left flank. About a third of Americans, 32%, fear that their careers would be harmed if their political views were known, with about 1 in 3 of liberals, moderates, and conservatives, liberals at 31%, moderates 30%, conservatives 34% alike sharing that concern. Fears of professional retribution may well be justified, as the survey found that 31% of Americans said they would support firing a business executive who donates to President Donald Trump's reelection campaign, and 22% would back firing one who personally donates to Joe Biden's campaign. Support for firing Trump supporters rises to 50% among strong liberals, while 36% of strong conservatives support firing Biden supporters. The survey results suggest that not just radical or fringe perspectives are being socially marginalized, but that even those holding mainstream views are being intimidated into silence. Now, this is important. And the reason it's important is because it's true. It's real. People do censor themselves in public when talking about certain things. Now, discernment is an important thing for adults to practice. You should, as they say, learn to read the room. You should know your audience. You should know what you can get away with and what you can't get away with. People in entertainment know this, and they know it well. They learn not to go certain places because you want everybody to be your friend, especially if you make money by doing something with groups of people. You want everybody to like you. So you find out what plays well and what doesn't play well. And in today's society, all of us, except those who are intensely liberal, and I would say that those are the progressives, not just liberal people, just not your run-of-the-mill garden variety liberal. I'm talking about progressives, those people They're not afraid to express their opinion, and they will express their opinion even if you don't want to hear their opinion, because, and here I go, the broken record once again, they wholeheartedly believe they are intellectually and morally superior to everyone else. And so they have no qualms whatsoever about saying what they think. Because as far as they're concerned, they're right, and you're too dumb to understand why. And that is why so many people censor themselves. If you encounter one of these people who believe you should be fired for having conservative views or supporting a conservative candidate, you rightfully censor yourself and avoid the topics which could get them in a knot and start working on having you removed from their presence, which they will do. And that in itself is interesting, because these people talk about tolerance, they talk about acceptance, they talk about embracing those who have different views. But as William F. Buckley once said, they talk about that, but they're shocked and disappointed that there are people with other views, that there are different views. How could that be? The progressive mindset is intolerant from the word go. It is completely intolerant of anything and everything which does not conform to what it sees as right. And it's because they see themselves as smarter than everyone else and no one else has the right to speak because they know better. So the study proves what we've been observing, just observing, for quite some time. The Cato Institute went out and asked the question, "The political climate these days prevents me from saying things I believe because others might find them offensive." And the results speak for themselves. We live in a society which has to censor itself for fear of retribution. They're afraid to share their political views. And those of us who aren't, well, I do so freely here, but in family settings, I don't, unless the conversation is kicked open and contributing to the conversation is the right thing to do. And fortunately, in my family, in an extended family, generally, people are conservative and they see things from the conservative viewpoint. In some instances, that's not true. In some instances, there are those who get all of their information from the NBC Nightly News. And online, they get reinforcement of the NBC Nightly News information from liberal news sources. That does happen. It happens to everybody. But still, you don't talk about things. Because most of us don't like conflict. We don't like getting into arguments with people. And in the case of progressives, or as this article calls them, strong liberals, you can't avoid an argument. Unless you see something coming, you see that conversation turning that direction, and you find yourself saying, "Hey, what about the Disney World prices? Have you noticed how far up they've gone lately? Oh, look, shiny." You've got to find a way to change the subject. Otherwise, everything's going to it's going to go to hell in a handbasket really fast. Most of us don't like conflict, and so we do what we can to avoid it. Some of us, like the progressives, they tend to thrive on conflict. They love arguing. And most of us would prefer not to. You know that old saying, you never get into a wrestling match with a pig. Don't never get into the mud with a pig. You're both going to get filthy, and the pig enjoys it. And that's what it's like when you get into these situations with progressives. Just don't. Don't get into these arguments with progressives. Do what you can to avoid it. Keep the peace. Because honestly, you can't have an intelligence exchange with someone who believes they are intellectually and morally superior to you. They talk about bigotry and prejudice, and they point their bony fingers of righteous indignation at people like you and accuse you of being prejudiced. But in all honesty, the most prejudiced people in society are those who believe they are intellectually and morally superior to everyone else. They prejudge everyone based on their perceptions and judge them not to meet their standards. And those are the people you want to avoid at all costs. Here we go, jumping into the final segment for this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. I got so much more left on the table I want to talk about here, but I'm just not going to have time. So let's dive right in here and see how much we can get accomplished. Chicago police have linked a group of armed kids to at least 16 carjackings since the end of June in the city's Southside neighborhood. The children, said to be ages 10 to 17, yes, you heard that correctly. 10 to 17 committed their first carjacking June 23rd, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. Wow. A Sunday community alert from the Chicago Police Department read, "In all of these incidents, 4 to 6 armed offenders approached citizens while they parked their vehicles or pulled into gas stations. They then demanded their vehicles and property. In 2 of the incidents, shots were fired, but no injuries were reported." A woman named Alyssa Blanchard was one of the victims. She was carjacked at gunpoint and said she's now too traumatized to go outside. She says, "I'm scared to use my garage. I don't feel safe in my neighborhood." She's an elementary school teacher and she was carjacked on the evening of July 14th as she pulled into her alley garage. A group of 3 or 4 children approached her vehicle and pointed handguns at her as they ordered her out of her BMW. She said they took her purse, about $300 of cash inside, and drove off in her car. She says, "It was so instantaneous. I was just scared for my life. I thought, this is it." Her BMW was used the next day to carjack a woman in the parking lot of Trinity Hospital. In that incident, a 21-year-old woman was carjacked at gunpoint in the early morning. 2 teenagers confronted her with a gun and forced her to the ground outside the car. The woman was taken to the hospital following the incident with a foot injury. Blanchard said, "I don't want to have to tell my kid about how some young woman was killed or shot with kids using my vehicle. It was traumatizing." Her BMW has since been recovered by the police. It was crashed a couple of days after it was stolen. As a school teacher, Blanchard told the Sun-Times she was shocked that children as young as 10 were involved in this kind of crime. She says, "I teach this age group, and I can't believe they would do this." Well, Ms. Blanchard, I encourage you to wake up and smell the coffee on the south side of Chicago. You should not be surprised. It is basically run by the criminal element. The old Jim Croce song said the south side of Chicago was the baddest part of town. You think it was bad then? It's a lot worse now. In fact, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, in response to Donald Trump saying he was going to send federal officers in to get the crime under control, said something about, if they go into the south side of Chicago, it'll be a war. So even Lori Lightfoot knows how bad Chicago's south side is. Should we be shocked that 10-year-olds or carrying firearms in the south side of Chicago and stealing cars? Yes and no. To decent, law-abiding, rational, normal people, it's shocking. But at the same time, we shake our heads and tell ourselves we really shouldn't be surprised. And these kids will grow up to be even worse. Far, far worse. More crime news. At least three federal officers deployed to Portland, Oregon, may have been permanently blinded after peaceful protesters shined high-intensity lasers in their eyes and launched fireworks at a federal courthouse there. Protests have continued to rage in the city for more than 55 consecutive days since the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis in late May, prompting President Trump to deploy federal officers to help quell the chaos, a move opposed by Democratic state and local leaders. They just want the violence to run rampant. Many of the demonstrations have turned violent as groups of rioters have engaged in standoffs with law enforcement, attacking officers with mortars, lasers, rocks, and bottles. Deputy Director of Federal Protective Service Richard Chris Klein told reporters Tuesday that a crowd of more than 1,000 rioters surrounded the Marco Hatfield Courthouse on Monday and began tearing plywood barriers down and throwing objects at officers inside. The rioters also allegedly graffitied the building, blocked roadways, and set several fires in the area. According to Klein, when officers responded to put out the fires, lasers that can cause permanent blindness were shined in their eyes. He said in a news conference, "We have three officers who currently have eye injuries, and they may not recover sight in those eyes from those laser attacks." Klein said that FPS has now purchased anti-laser glasses to protect their officers' eyes. He added that 7 arrests were made Monday night and early morning Tuesday, 2 for assaults on federal officers and 5 others on misdemeanor charges. Also during the news conference, Department of Homeland Security Acting Secretary Chad Wolf took aim at the city of Portland for its apparent disinterest in quelling the violence, saying, "These individuals carry lasers, baseball bats, explosive fireworks, metal pipes, glass bottles, accelerants, and other weapons, all targeting federal facilities and federal law enforcement. And yet the city of Portland takes little to no action." Federal officers have been active in Portland since earlier this month, despite resistance from Democratic officials. Democratic Congressman Earl Blumenauer, who represents the city, argued in the face of facts that, quote, "Portland, Oregon is not out of control, but rather there are simply some people who have strong feelings."
Oh, they just have strong feelings.
Portland Democrat Mayor Ted Wheeler has also criticized Trump for sending federal officers to the city, calling the move, quote, "a blatant abuse of police tactics by the federal government," and arguing that the presence of federal officers has sharply escalated the situation. Ted Wheeler is, I'll just put it this way, if the village is looking for their idiot, he's in Portland. Oh, speaking of, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison said it would be better not to have police officers responding to rape calls in situations when the rapist has already fled. Instead, Ellison suggests it's preferable to have a social worker trained in interacting with rape victims respond to such a call. In making his point, Ellison dismisses police officers as people who are simply trained in how to use guns. Here's the quote. Keith Ellison said this while he was on a virtual panel with PBS's Yamiche Alcindor and California Democratic Representative Karen Bass. "If you're a woman who's been a victim of a sexual assault and the assailant ran away, wouldn't you rather talk to somebody who is trained in helping you deal with what you're dealing with, as opposed to somebody whose main training is that they know how to use a firearm, right?" Ellison's comments are similar to rhetoric that has surrounded efforts to defund or dismantle police departments in liberal localities. The idea is that police officers shouldn't be responding to things that could conceivably be handled more effectively by social workers or other unarmed officials in order to minimize the potential for unnecessary violent conflicts that can lead to police killings. Applying that to mental health crises or minor traffic stops carries its own problems, but applying it to the violent crime of rape is even more controversial and potentially dangerous. Also, Ellison's description of police as nothing more than people who know how to use guns is inaccurate and indicates a narrow way of viewing police that's potentially fueling anti-police rhetoric. Police officers are trained to respond capably to a variety of situations that don't require the use of firearms, including sexual assaults. For victims' comfort and for public safety, having police respond to not only take care of the victim but to work quickly toward catching the suspect is crucial, even and especially if that person has fled the scene. It is appropriate for us to recall that Ellison has faced accusations of sexual abuse that occurred back in 2018. Minneapolis, where George Floyd, the article, I'm going to say this to the folks at The Blaze, this is coming for The Blaze. The way you phrase this is that he was killed by police officers. George Floyd died while in the custody of police officers. But as yet, have we seen a report? Keith Ellison, where's the report? Where's the official examination of how George Floyd really died? Where is that? I suggest you focus on that and tell us the truth about what happened there. And I'm going to focus on my weekend. I suggest you do the same. Unplug. Get yourself alone for a while. Love on your family and friends. Have some fun. And meet me back here Monday for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Have a good one. God bless. Bye-bye.
I'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?